Evam eteshu bhedeshu. Charam jhatra sa atma bhuk. Satya ke kathare neti. Jyatum nishte kathanshana. Translation. Thus Lord Brahma, thinking and thinking for a long time, tried to distinguish between those two sets of boys who were each separately existing. He tried to understand who was real and who was not real, but he couldn't understand at all. Purport. Brahma was puzzled. The original boys and calves are still sleeping as I have kept them, he thought. But another set is here playing with Krishna. How has this happened? Brahma could not grasp what was happening. Which boys were real and which were not real? Brahma was unable to come to any definite conclusion. He pondered the matter for a long while. How can there be two sets of calves and boys at the same time? Have the calves and boys here been created by Krishna? Or has Krishna created the ones lying asleep? Or are both merely creations of Krishna? Brahma thought about the subject in many different ways. After I go to the cave and see that the boys and calves are still there, does Krishna go take them away and put them here so that I come here and see them? And does Krishna take them from here and put them there? Brahma could not figure out how there could be two sets of calves and cowherd boys exactly alike. Although thinking and thinking, he could not understand at all. You want to read the next text also? Also, that's a very long purport. Next one. Om Jnana Chimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Lord Brahma is thinking and thinking and thinking, and his thinking power far exceeds anything we know about. Yet, still he cannot understand Krishna's mystic potency. In the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, you learn that even the demigods are bewildered. They're mystified by what Krishna does. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains directly, Name vidu suragana prabhavam na maharshaya aham adiyahi devanam maharshinam cha sarvasah. Krishna is personally declaring, no one understands me. Sometimes people in the material world, in the material sense, they like to take pride. No one can understand me. I'm so inscrutable. No one can understand my methods, my real motives, my plans. People sometimes like to feel a sense of mystique about that. Powerful political leaders especially. They like that aspect of government rule, that they can be inscrutable and they can be doing things which no one else understands except the leader and his cronies. So people, because they're part of Krishna, they have that desire for inscrutability and the pride to say, no one can understand me. Actually, everyone in the material world is very easy to understand. There is no mystery in sense gratification. Why does it look like that, though? Because of Krishna's mystifying, bewildering energy. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam chiganatmana. Everyone is colored by the three modes of material nature. So actually, what we are trying to enjoy is simply the effect of the three modes of nature. There's no such thing, actually, as material enjoyment. Now, this may be a revolutionary point when we are attached to sense gratification. How can there be no such thing as material enjoyment? Isn't that what makes the world go around? Sometimes materialists say it is love that makes the world go around. No, the materialistic version of love is simply lust. So what actually makes the world go around? The illusion that there is such a thing as material happiness. What is the technology for what is actually going on? What is actually going on is that the super soul from within your body causes you to try and enjoy the effects of the three modes of material nature. And this is how we are cheated. We think, here is a sense object. With my senses, I shall enjoy it directly. But you are not actually enjoying the sense object. First of all, what can spirit soul do about enjoying matter? It's not possible. But you can imagine. So what is actually going on? The Lord within your heart, He is in charge of your perception. This is a humiliating point, that your own perception is not yours. Your own perception is an implement in the hands of the super soul, in that Muttasmitya Gyanamapolanam Cha, from the Lord in the heart, Paramatma, is coming your ability to remember, to forget, to understand. So the super soul from within your heart causes you to try and enjoy the effects of the three modes of nature. It is a bewildering potency that is in the mind. That's all. So you're clutching at something that is not there because you are motivated by the super soul within, who is simply fulfilling your desires. You can get intuition from the Supreme Lord in two ways. Krishna will remind you of your past material desires, because at the time of death you forget them all. So the super soul has to remind you of your perverted program. In your past life you wanted to rebel like this. Now here is your chance in this life. And the other kind of intuition that is coming from Krishna is that he can give you instruction how to go back to Godhead. Tesham satata yuktana bhajatam priti purvakam. If you render devotional service with priti, with affection, then Krishna says, I'll talk to you. I'll give you advice how to go back home, back to Godhead. But that is a special qualification attained by those who do service with affection, transcendental love. Now we have to start somewhere. So at least we should do service under rule and regulation, because we know we have to. We must take the medicine. Patients don't always like to take the medicine that the doctor prescribes, but they do it for their own good. So in the beginning, there is that motivation. I will do this because it's for my own good. Gradually, however, attraction develops, that there's nothing else to do except serve Krishna. How can I not serve Krishna? He is the most attractive. You see, when you say that God is love, you actually mean that God is all attractive. Outside of India, in the other parts of the world, sometimes people say like that, God is love. But they have no idea what is God and what is love. So you can give an elementary education into how God is love. First of all, how can there be love without attraction? This is a fundamental principle of Prabhupada's theology. For there to be love, there must be attraction. You see, we are so dull in material life that we can't understand. We're living our whole existence to be attracted. We are pursuing attraction. That is what makes us struggle for sense gratification. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mamaivamsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. He claims all living entities. Mama eva amsha. You are certainly my parts and parcels. Sanatana, eternally. But what is the problem then? You think, well, if we're Krishna's parts and parcels eternally, why do we have problems? And why are we in this illusory world? There's one simple reason. Manasasthan indriyani. We are struggling with our senses. We want sense gratification. Therefore, although we are part of Krishna, intimate part of the Lord, Amsa, still, we have another mission which has led us astray. And we need to understand the futility of that mission. Every intelligent person should know, what is my mission in life? And then you have to analyze, is that mission working out? Is it futile or not? Attraction must be there, both in the spiritual and the material sense. In the material world, you pursue perverted attraction. Nevertheless, the name of the game is still attraction. And of course, in the spiritual world, you are directly conscious that all the attraction is there as Krishna. You can analyze Krishna in terms of his parts, but actually everything is Krishna, about Krishna. Still, the acharyas explain about the various aspects of Krishna's body and personality to stimulate your ecstatic love. Love is stimulated by attraction. Without attraction, there's no love, even in the perverted materialistic sense. Therefore, when you say God is love, you must uncover what is the attraction. But if people do not understand the all-attractiveness of Krishna, how can there be love? We are trying to show people that Krishna is the source of all attraction, that Krishna has the best attractions, and in this way, they will cease to try to enjoy the effects of the modes of nature from within the mind. Now, whether you know about the attractiveness of Krishna or not, still, your material mission will be to replace the attraction of Krishna with material attraction. If in the impure stage of devotional service, even if you know about Krishna, that is the point, still there is a tendency to try and replace Krishna with material attraction, and that causes us some grief. That causes us complications. Therefore, the whole process of bhakti yoga is how to wean us away from thinking material life has attraction. And you can tell your spiritual health is increasing when more and more you are simply attracted to Krishna directly, and you are not attracted to anything in the material world, except in relation directly to Krishna. Maharaj Prichit, he had the proper symptoms as certified by Shukadev Goswami that his attraction to Krishna was quite all right. What happened in the previous chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam? The Agasura Leela had been completed. Prichit Maharaj, being a keen hearer of Krishna Katha, he knows how to pick out the issues that Krishna wants stirred. You see, the Bhagavatam not only gives you answers, but it teaches you how to ask proper questions.
So if you study the questions of Pritchett Maharaj, you get a sense of priorities. And sometimes when you're studying Pritchett Maharaj's questions, you may think, well, why is he asking this? What's the big deal? I would never ask something like that. And in this way, your intelligence can become formulated properly by following in the footsteps of Pritchett Maharaj. You'll know what is actually important subject matter. The Bhagavatam is a nested dialogue. Dialogues nested within one another. So you'll get a chance to experience the questions by Vidura, or the questions by the sages at Naimisharanya, the questions by Pritchett. And in this way, your spiritual intelligence will develop. The Bhagavatam is art, science, and culture. It is giving you the perfect way to do everything for pleasing Krishna. So therefore, let us look at Pritchett Maharaj's inquiry. He says, the killing of Agasura was not discussed in Vrindavan for 1 year. When they finally started discussing it, it had happened 1 year ago, yet they were discussing the killing of Agasura like it just happened. Why is this? He's asking to Shukadeva Goswami. He says, Shukadeva Goswami, you are Mahayogi. You are the greatest yogi. Why? Because you have some material mystic power? No. Because you know Krishna, therefore you're the greatest yogi. So I'm asking you, what is the reason for this? Why? They're discussing the Agasura killing as if it's a contemporary event when it happened a year ago. And then in Pritchett Maharaj's question, he said, actually, something to do with Krishna has to be the answer. Krishna's potencies are at work in some way. So I would like to know. You see, in the Bhagavatam questions, there's also knowledge given. Not just in the answers in Srimad Bhagavatam, but in the questions, there's also knowledge. So Pritchett Maharaj says, how did it happen? Why? It must be due to the energies of Krishna. Now you please explain. And then he humbly presented himself, because humility is necessary for the spiritual brain to work. He said, I'm Kshatriya-bandhava. I'm the lowest of the Kshatriyas. Still, because I'm hearing Krishna Katha from you, I'm fortunate. But actually, what is my position? I'm the lowest of Kshatriyas. Why? Because I insulted the Brahmana whose son cursed me. So everyone knows my position. I'm so low, but by hearing Krishna Katha from you, I'm so fortunate. Then what happened? Shukadeva Goswami, he went in and out of external consciousness, being so motivated by the questions asked by Pritchett Maharaj. This shows you that the spiritual master-disciple relationship is reciprocal. It is not that it is a dictatorship in which the disciple must become a piece of stone. That fear is always there. Oh, my real needs will be neglected. I'll just have to submit. No. The spiritual master-disciple relationship is one of reciprocation and the flow of opportunities for serving Krishna between the two of them. So, Shukadeva Goswami is very happy. Oh, Pritchett Maharaj is giving me a chance to talk about Krishna. He's asking about Krishna. So therefore, he momentarily loses contact with the external world and then he comes back. And Pritchett Maharaj, from his side, he's glorifying Shukadeva Goswami that I'm feeling such attachment to these topics. And then Shukadeva Goswami explains Pritchett Maharaj's situation to him. He said, you are so fortunate. You're not actually, in other words, Chhatra Bandhava. You're not the lowest of the Kshatriyas. You are Bhagavatottama. You're the greatest devotee. And I'll tell you why. Because you are experiencing the Lord's pastimes as newer and newer at every moment. That is the symptom of your health. You are experiencing the attractiveness of Krishna. As I explain Krishna Leela to you. Therefore, you're seeing freshness at every moment. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the sages at Naimrasaranya, they presented the situation like that to Sukta Goswami. Vayam tina vichipyama uchama shloka vikrame yachchin vitam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. We never tire of hearing about Uttama Shloka, that Supreme Lord who is glorified by the greatest verses. We never tire of it. Anyone who actually knows how to relish rasa, they are experiencing attraction to Krishna's pastimes at every step. Swadu, swadu, pade, pade. So that is a symptom that attraction is functioning properly. And Shukadev Goswami certified that in Pritchett Maharaj. And then he began to explain the Brahma Vimohana Leela, in which not only Brahma is bewildered, but everyone in Vrindavan is bewildered. Even Balaram becomes bewildered. Even Krishna acts like he's bewildered. For fun, where are the cows? Where are the cowherd boys? What has happened? Because the Lord is a supreme enjoyer, he likes puzzles. He likes riddles. We can see the perverted reflection of that in the material world, in which people, they play with these cubes, and they do crossword puzzles, and because they like the sensation or the experience of solving a puzzle. It's like in, for example, Spanish, the word for puzzle or riddle is rompe cabeza, a headbreaker. People like to feel that, oh, this is taxing my brain, this puzzle. I want to experience the joy of solving it. So, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Don't think that he's going to neglect having puzzle enjoyment. No, he's already demonstrated in Agasura Leela, a killing of Agasura, that he can enjoy being momentarily puzzled. Oh, how to kill Agasura? My friends have marched into his mouth. How can I kill the Agasura demon without disturbing my friends? What to do? In this way, momentarily, Krishna is enjoying the ecstasy of having a puzzle put in front of him. And then, of course, he knows what to do. So, Mayavadis cannot understand this. You say the Supreme Lord is all-knowing. He's an all-knowing person, and yet he becomes bewildered. How can this be? The most important thing to understand about Bhagavan is that he is the enjoyer. Therefore, Krishna enjoys in endless varieties of ways. And in the Brahma Vimohana Leela, he also demonstrates once again the enjoyment of not knowing what's going on apparently. So he's looking. What happened to the calves? What happened to the cowherd boys? He told the cowherd boys, just wait here. Do not disturb your enjoyment. Just see how the Supreme Lord cares about his parts and parcels. Don't disturb your enjoyment. I shall look for the calves. The whole scene started when the Lord identified a particular spot on the riverbank. And he told the cowherd boys, look at the beauty of nature here. Do you notice how the lotus flowers have fragrance and they're attracting the birds and bees? You see, the Bhagavatam is full of sense objects. You should not gloss over these things. These sensory expressions are there to purify your senses and to revive your spiritual senses. Therefore, when you read the Bhagavatam, all your senses should be alert. Your nose should be alert, smelling the lotus flowers. Your ears should be alert. Krishna pointed that out to the cowherd boys. Do you hear the sound produced by the humming of the bees? Do you hear the sound of the chirping birds? These echoes are filling the trees. This is a great spot for our pastime. In this way, Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, he demonstrates, I tell you what pleasure is, and then you follow, and everything works out. He's the leader of pleasure, and the cowherd boys knew it. Krishna has identified this spot as most suitable for our pastimes, so let it be. This is how pleasure goes on. In our conditioned state, however, we think, I know what pleasure is on my own. That is the arrogance of the conditioned soul. I can enjoy. I've got some enjoying abilities. I know what to do to be happy. This kind of pride is the qualification for remaining in material existence. But in Vrindavan, everyone knows that our life is simply centered on Krishna. He's the heart of our hearts, and he said this spot is suitable for our pastimes, so let it be like that. Notice how Krishna alerted the cowherd boys. Look at Vrindavan. See, hear, smell. Isn't this nice for what we're going to do? Everyone agrees. Yes, yes, yes. This is nice for our reciprocal pleasure. So then they had their lunchtime pastimes. These lunch-taking pastimes are another thing that bewildered the demigods, including Brahma. They're watching. Look at these boys. They're playing, and this little blue boy is supposed to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're tasting each other's lunch, and they're having a good time all with Krishna together, and Krishna knows how to stir the enjoyment amongst his devotees. So Krishna is creating mirth and merriment. He's joking with them, encouraging a congregational collective pleasure. That is Vrindavan. Everyone is satisfying Krishna together. All their desires are harmonized in giving pleasure to the Lord. So Krishna is demonstrating that like the whirl of the lotus flower. The cowherd boys, they're the petals seated around him. Krishna's in the center, and he's stirring the ananda, the reciprocal pleasure, joking, and each cowherd boy is looking at Krishna, expecting Krishna will look at me. So in this way, the scene is going on. They're tasting each other's lunches that they brought from home. So the demigods are watching. Brahma is watching. Can this really be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And then Brahma, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, he's thinking, well, I've got mystic power too. I'll give a little demonstration. So, you know what happens. Lord Brahma, he thinks he's removing the calves and cowherd boys. And then, you know, how Krishna responded by bewildering Lord Brahma, bewildering the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, the cowherd boys, and the cows, and bewildering Balaram. Balaram couldn't catch on to what was happening until almost the end of the leela. And then he began to think, what is this great exhibition of love of Krishna I'm seeing in Vrindavan? Things have increased. The mothers are loving their boy just like he's Krishna. The cows are loving a particular calf just like the calf is Krishna. How can this be? Am I bewildered by some Rakshasi? No, I'm Balaram. Not possible. He does an identity check. No, I'm, as we all know, I'm Balaram. I cannot be bewildered. I think this is something Krishna is doing. And then Krishna, seeing that Balaram is catching on to what's going on, Krishna takes Balaram aside and explains to him, this is the story. And of course, as we said, that even Krishna acted like he was bewildered. What has happened? Where have the calves and cowherd boys gone? Bewilderment is an essential feature of life. Maybe in our contaminated understanding of perfection, we think that there will be a time when we will not be bewildered. No. As marginal potency of the Lord, you can simply choose how you'll be bewildered. Shall you be bewildered by the inferior potency? Or shall you be bewildered by the superior potency? You take your pick. But you can never become God. You can never become all-knowing. Maybe sometimes we have this contamination to think that the perfection of Krishna consciousness will be when my head swells and I understand everything. No. The perfection of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada explained, is when you know whatever Krishna wants you to know. That might be humiliating. What? You mean I'm still going to be dependent on Krishna when I'm perfect? I still won't be self-sufficient? I'll still have to rely on the Lord? Oh, I thought I was going to become the all-in-all, and I wouldn't have to use Krishna like a crutch. I would be potent in myself. No. Even in your perfect stage, you simply know what Krishna wants you to know. And that is demonstrated in Vrindavan, where no one cares that Krishna is God because of the influence of the yoga maya potency. Krishna doesn't want them to know he's God because it would ruin the pleasure. So there in Vrindavan, they are bewildered in the perfect way. And in the material world, we are bewildered in the imperfect way. But you must be bewildered. You can pursue material enjoyment and be bewildered that way, or you can pursue Krishna's pleasure. That means pursuing your role in giving pleasure to the Supreme Lord. Not that you try to take Krishna's pleasure for yourself. That reminds me, some devotees, they once asked Srila Prabhupada. Now, if, they asked him directly, if we are satisfied completely in our perfect state, how could we give up the spiritual world and come to the material world? Because Prabhupada had just explained that when you are completely satisfied, let's say husband with wife or wife with husband, he gave that example. Therefore, you don't look anywhere else. So the devotees immediately jumped on that point. Oh, all right, Srila Prabhupada, but well then how did we leave Krishna? Krishna is completely satisfying. So does that mean there was some deficiency in Krishna that we thought we saw or imagined, and therefore we said, I'm leaving? And Prabhupada explained, it is not like that. It is a fact that Krishna is fully satisfying. And it is a fact that there is nothing to be experienced with Krishna by the living entity other than full satisfaction. But, he said, it's like if every day you're eating very nice dal rice and chapatis. Now, you are satisfied. You like the dal rice and chapatis. But one day you're thinking, maybe I should try something else, some pizza or lasagna. So this doesn't mean that you were not satisfied with the dal rice and chapatis. It just meant you wanted to enjoy another way. So in this way, Prabhupada explained the point about how could we leave Krishna if we were fully satisfied with Krishna. So, once you want something else other than Krishna, then you are bewildered by the material energy and you start imagining that there's such a thing as material happiness. You see, you identify with the body because of your desire for sense gratification. Our bodily identification originates from the desire to enjoy the senses. The body is a collection or bag of senses. Indriyani pranayalu, Krishna explains in the Gita. With this bag of senses, you try to achieve your mission of getting material enjoyment. The whole process can be stopped when first you understand there's no such thing as material enjoyment, and secondly, when you use your senses to please Krishna's senses. Narottam Das Thakur, he gives a very wonderful insight into the situation in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika. He says, the sense objects are there, the senses are there, and I'm full of the six enemies, lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion. Therefore, even though I know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there, still I'm troubled. Why is this? What to do? Then he explained the secret. Those six enemies, you can at least use five of them in Krishna's service. So Narottam Das Thakur says, you're feeling troubled by lust, anger, greed, and so forth. You're feeling troubled by your senses, even though you know that the basic truths of spiritual life. This is what you do. You use lust for Krishna's pleasure. You lust to use everything in Krishna's service. You become angry when Krishna's devotees are offended. And you become greedy to hear about the Lord in the association of devotees. And you become illusioned when you feel separation from Krishna. That is the transcendental illusion, as most perfectly demonstrated by Lord Chaitanya. Yugayatam nameshena. One namesha, a moment, seems like 12 years. So this is the height of the perfection of illusion. What else did Narottam Das Thakur say? Pride. You can feel pride in the glories of the Lord, that you are chanting the glories of the Lord. Not pride in yourself, but pride, I'm chanting Krishna's glories. In this way, you can use these things in Krishna's service, and Narottam Das Thakur points out, this is the way to get away from the problem of feeling bewildered by the attacks of the six enemies. He didn't mention envy, though. He mentioned five out of six. What to do about envy? Prabhupada explained that envy of devotees is actually indirect appreciation. Because you only envy someone who's doing something superior. Then you envy them. So you simply recognize that, why am I feeling envious? Because someone is doing something nice. It means, in a perverted way, I'm appreciating. So you counteract that by just appreciating and without being envious. Oh, this is such a nice thing you've done. This is such nice service you're doing. If you're going to appreciate, make it direct. Why indirect? So troublesome and polluting to be envious, but just directly appreciate. And then the envy goes. So in this way, we can see Bhakti Yoga is very expert and skillful in dealing with the troublemakers and turning them into assets. And in that way, you escape bewilderment by the material energy, and you can enter into bewilderment. In the spiritual world, the height of which goes on in Vrindavan. And now you get to hear about Brahma scratching his head. What's going on here? He's bewildered. Are both sets of cowherd boys creations of Krishna? Or is one set? Or what's going on? Is Krishna switching them around? He's trying to understand Krishna through his own speculative abilities, and Krishna is embarrassing Lord Brahma. You cannot understand me, even you. And, of course, the end result will be that Brahma, he will fall down at the feet of the Lord, his all four heads onto the lotus feet of the Lord. He'll be rising and falling and bathing the Lord's feet with his tears. Brahma just wanted a little innocent fun. Let me test, is this really Krishna? But he came back after a split second of his time. Maybe I shouldn't do this. It's not very nice to meddle in Krishna's pastime. But his split second, as you all know, was a year of earth time. So in this way you get some cosmic scientific truths also going on in the Bhagavatam. This is a very wonderful chapter by Srila Prabhupada, as you all know. I remember working at the BBT when this chapter arrived in Los Angeles, and someone came into my office. They put this chapter in the envelope, you know, just as it's coming from India, on my desk for me to put it into production. And I, of course, first thing I did, when you get a chapter directly from Prabhupada, you sit down and read it. So I was reading, and this was, as it turned out, 2 days before Srila Prabhupada's departure. And I remember distinctly, upon reading these purports, I was just overwhelmed. How can Srila Prabhupada write like this and give so much in such a precarious condition of how can this be done, these purports? Of course, everywhere you taste in the Bhagavatam is sweet. Yet we can also say that the 13th chapter purports of the 10th canto, they're so packed with Prabhupada giving of himself. So I remember while reading those verses, I got the distinct realization, Srila Prabhupada, he's not going to stay, he will depart. Because for many devotees, we thought there was a chance that Prabhupada would stay. The leaders who were in Vrindavan, they were knowing otherwise, but many devotees who were not there thought, oh, any moment Prabhupada's health will go the other way. So I read that chapter, and then I could distinctly get the realization, Srila Prabhupada, he'll be departing. And then 2 days later, we got the message in Los Angeles that Prabhupada had departed. So what a proof of transcendental love that Prabhupada has left us in such a precarious, devastated medical condition. He's left us such a purport as a permanent reminder of the glories of the proper execution of bhakti yoga. Any comments or questions? This, when reading this chapter, that you can even study these synonyms because Prabhupada packs them with special enriched word-for-word amplifications. He used every opportunity to just pack this chapter with transcendental nourishment for his followers. So many times these synonyms, the word-for-word explanations, they are long because they're amplified. Mundane scholars, they don't like this. They try to criticize Prabhupada's books. He didn't take the exact dictionary definition in his synonyms, or my Sanskrit dictionary doesn't have the definitions he's using. Subhad Maharaj was telling me once how in London, one British scholar came to see Prabhupada, and this scholar had also put out his edition of Bhagavad Gita, supposedly. So he sat before Prabhupada, and Prabhupada treated him, he's a distinguished man, so he was greeted and treated by the devotees and Srila Prabhupada with proper greeting. So the man began to tell Prabhupada, Swami Bhaktivedanta, I have put out Bhagavad Gita, but I must say that in looking at your Bhagavad Gita, the words, that how you translate them, I don't find them in the dictionary, how you've done it. So Prabhupada would just ignore him. And the man went on, we have our standard dictionaries, and the way you have used some words, I just don't find it in those dictionaries. And so Prabhupada continued to ignore him while the man went on like that. And then Prabhupada motioned to the devotees, you please give him some prasad.
So the man took prasad and then he left. As soon as he was out the door, Prabhupada turned to the devotees and gave his purport. He said that whatever is in my books, Krishna has dictated. And therefore, wherever these books go, people are becoming devotees, because Krishna has dictated these books. When you read this 13th chapter, you can relish in that delight, how in such a devastated physical condition, Prabhupada would put such humor, such artistry, such embellishment in this chapter as a permanent testimony that don't think I'm the body. Mm-hmm. And love of Krishna transcends all limitations of time and space. So, anyone have anything to ask? Post. Everything was there. Mm-hmm.
Chapter.
Hmm? Is that chapter different in any ways compared to the previous purport or previous chapter's purport? Is it different?
I find it different. At that time, I had the nice service of being forced to meditate on Prabhupada's purport 12 hours a day, because that's the speed in which the BBC was producing his books. So they kept us busy 12 hours a day just having to edit and copy edit. So this chapter, I immediately saw this is special because it's amplified. There's humor there. Prabhupada is being very personal and intimate in this chapter, even making jokes. Here he is on his deathbed and he's making jokes about four-headed scientists. He said his sickness was enough to make an ordinary man constantly cry out in pain. Yet in his chapter he's talking about four-headed Brahma and four-headed scientists and joking like that. So, yes, you will find this chapter different, because the purports are amplified, the word for words are synonyms are amplified, and the purports, they have a charm, very personal giving of Prabhupada in the purports. Whereas other purports, you'll find more formal. But this chapter is very very personal, in which it's like you're right there in the room with Prabhupada, and he's having a very personal, intimate exchange with you. Thank you very much. All glories of Prabhupada.